Next case is 07452, Allstate Insurance Company versus Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company. Ms. Weaver.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, Your Honors. Lynn Weaver on behalf of the appellant, Allstate Insurance Company, in this matter. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal argument.
Time there.
Case before you today involves one issue, that of jurisdiction. Whether a negligence complaint that involves a utility's failure to respond to a customer's emergency call that results in a fire at that customer's home is a common law tort subject to the jurisdiction of the Court of Common Pleas, or whether it is a service-related claim subject to the exclusive jurisdiction of the Public Utility Company, Public Utility Commission of Ohio, pursuant to statute.
Your whole argument seems to hinge around what is the definition of service. When I call a utility company and say, I've got a wire down, come fix it, I think of that as service. You keep trying to put it into a description other than service. Why is not a repair call service? I have a hard time understanding. To me, it's like a rose by another name is still a rose. A service call is still a service call. And why does not that fit under the PUCO definition of service?
And I think that was the underpinning of the rationale of the appellate court in this case. A service call where the utility responds and actually comes out and conducts a repair is a service.
And if they don't come out and conduct a repair, they failed to make a service call. So you're saying that the failure to make a service call becomes a tort, and if you make a service call but you do it negligently, it's service?
No, not exactly. I think that the distinction, and the distinction that I would make to the court is simply this. PUCO has exclusive jurisdiction over some matters involving claims and issues regarding utilities because the legislature's rationale was that they had a specific administrative expertise to resolve certain issues. So Section 4905.26 defines that expertise, defines PUCO's jurisdiction. There are many claims or situations that would be outside of PUCO's specific administrative expertise. Anything that does not require their specific administrative expertise becomes the province of the Court of Common Pleas. PUCO doesn't have jurisdiction over every claim that may conceivably be related to a utility.
But yet the statute clearly gives it jurisdiction over service.
Over some portions of utility service, yes. I mean, as the Gayhart Court observed, you'd be hard-pressed to find a claim against a utility that didn't involve the word service or some aspect of service. I think the point is that the legislature intended to give PUCO narrow jurisdiction over some types of claims that require specific administrative expertise.
So getting back to my original question, answering a call, negligently performing the repair is service, but failure to answer the call is not service and a tort. That's your position?
I believe that's true. Failure to respond to a dangerous condition of your property is a common law principle. Everyone has a duty to respond to notification that there's a dangerous condition on their property. That's not something that requires the expertise of PUCO to understand. I believe that's the failure to respond to an emergency call is not a service as it relates to 4905.26, but a common law obligation, in this case, an isolated act of negligence.
Are you relying on Mid-American Fire?
Is that to a great degree, yes. I mean, I would rely on the analysis in Gayhart, also in Harris v. Ohio Edison, but I think that Mid-American is directly on point here.
And your subrogated claim is filed as what cause of action?
It's filed as a negligence cause of action.
So the mere fact that we're talking about the service of utility company is incidental, in a sense, to whether a duty was breached or not. We're not talking about the technicalities, the hyper-technicalities that PUCO would have to be involved with in making the determination. And what we're saying, we said this as far back as Kazmaier Supermarket, the argument that you're making, that Title 49 was created and the PUCO was given exclusive jurisdiction when their expertise was needed, but this is not a case where their expertise would be needed. Is that your?
I agree.
Well, counsel, who was going to fix that down wire if it wasn't going to be the electric company? When you talk about they didn't need their expertise, who was going to take care of this?
Well, certainly CEI would have been required to make the repair.
Is there anybody, not just required, is there anybody else that they could have called to come out here and address this issue?
No, I don't believe so.
So it's a service-related call?
It would certainly be a service-related call. The distinction that I would draw is that if they fail to make that call, we don't require PUCO's expertise to analyze that and find that they were negligent in this situation. It's certainly service-related, and if they were to come out and fix the line, it would have been a service provided by CEI. What I'm saying is that the facts of this case make it a case that is appropriate to the Court of Common Pleas. We don't need, in order to assess what happened, the rights and responsibilities of these parties, we don't need PUCO's expertise. This is a matter that would be appropriate in the Court of Common Claims.
Can I understand, are you saying that if there was a problem in the service call, you would see that as a PUCO matter? It seems to me that if you're talking about service and the duty of the utility company to perform, the whole thing is a potential common pleas case as well. Whether they did or did not adequately perform the service would be a common law matter. We're not talking about was the service adequate vis-a-vis other individuals within the rate-making area. I mean, if we were talking about the old rate-making or the current situation where you have to have the PUCO look at a situation in light of the entire state or region. Are you really making a distinction in saying that the adequacy of the service would be for PUCO to determine?
No.
For a service call, I'm saying.
No, because I think if you look at Gayhart and if you look at Harris v. Ohio Edison, those are circumstances where the utility did come out and make a repair. Mm-hmm. Or was advised of the situation and either failed to come out and make a repair or made a negligent repair. I think Harris v. Ohio Edison is a negligent repair of a neutral trap. And those are circumstances where the court still looked at the facts before them and said that the expertise of PUCO was not necessary in the circumstance. I mean, what I'm suggesting is that the intent of the legislature was not to remove authority from the Court of Common Pleas for customers and citizens to bring their claims. The intent of the legislature was to carve out certain exceptions, rates, tariffs, charges, classifications, where PUCO's expertise was needed. The intent of the legislature wasn't to put a customer through a circumstance where every case would have to go through PUCO, only to be told at the end of the PUCO proceeding, well, now you can go down to the Court of Common Pleas, you have a claim. I mean, that procedure is just too onerous.
Well, I guess that's my question. What relief, if you had filed your claim, or we say your claim should have been filed against CEI in the Public Utilities Commission, what relief could the commission have given you, the company?
I have not been through the Public Utilities Commission proceeding. But it varies depending on the circumstances. But it's my understanding, number one, that they don't have the authority to determine parties' rights and liabilities. And they also, in most circumstances, don't have the ability to assess and award monetary damages. If this claim were to have been brought, or if the court made the determination that we needed to go to PUCO first, the best thing I could hope for as a customer or as a citizen is to go through that process only to be told at the end of the process, I may now take my claim to the Court of Common Pleas and litigate it all over again. And as I suggested, I think for the citizen, for the customer, that process is so onerous, it effectively immunizes the utility from claims by citizens or customers. I mean, when you look at the case law, it's typically a subrogation matter because the average customer doesn't have the wherewithal to pursue litigation against a utility. I don't think we ought to make it harder by requiring them to go to the Utilities Commission first and then come back and litigate later. I would suggest, as we did in our brief, that this court adopt the two-prong test articulated in the Pacific Indemnity case. I think that two-prong test sufficiently and accurately articulates the jurisdictional requirements that are appropriate here. Excuse me. The first question is, PUCO's administrative expertise required to resolve the issues in dispute? In this case, I think I've demonstrated by my argument that I don't believe that that's true. In this case, the jury and the Court of Common Pleas was adequately able to determine that CEI's failure to respond to this emergency call was in fact negligence. PUCO's expertise wasn't needed for any aspect of that determination. The second prong of that test is, does the act complained of constitute a practice normally authorized by the utility? And I think you'll hear Mr. Michaels stand up here in a few minutes and say that this is a business practice normally authorized by the utility, meaning that they actually pick up and answer the phone and answer service calls. We have no quarrel with the way they answer their service calls or even with the way they generally classify them. But in this particular instance, the facts of this service call, as recorded by CEI themselves, was line about to snap. Clearly a dangerous situation. I don't think it's a practice normally authorized, nor do I think they can argue that it practice normally authorized by CEI to ignore obviously dangerous situations. So under that two-prong test articulated in Pacific Indemnity, I believe that our claim was properly before the Court of Common Pleas. As an aside, I believe that the two-prong test articulated by Pacific Indemnity provides some clarity. It's a simple test to use. It provides some clarity, and it would also provide instruction to the courts and to future litigants as to where their claim would appropriately be or what battle they would be facing if they chose to pursue a claim against the utility. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. Mr. Michaels.
Mr. Michaels, what's your objection to being in the Common Pleas Court?
The objection is it doesn't belong there. But you need the expertise of the PUCO. This is right in the sweet spot, excuse me, of what belongs in the PUCO. Because you have to understand what happened here. What happened here is we got a call consistent with the practice and procedures of our customer service center that takes 9.7 million calls a year, thousands of tree limb on a wire calls. We process that call. The evidence in all of the case law says the same thing. Is there evidence of a practice or procedure? Here, absolutely. Our customer service person acted consistent with her training. The system did exactly what it was designed to do, and the call was processed accordingly. Here's what the customer service person does. Call comes in, first question, where's the wire you're talking about? Is it pole to pole or is it pole to house? That tells you the magnitude of the line, how high the voltage is. Next question they ask, is your power on? If your power's off, that means we have a line down somewhere. We have an emergency. Are your lights flickering? The answer here was no. That means the connections are intact. Our stuff was working fine. And in fact, on page 10 of their merit brief, they say our electrical service was exemplary. The only dispute here is this one in a million shot fell outside of our system for handling calls.
Counsel,
our line never came down.
Counsel, if they're to go to the commission, what relief can they obtain?
Treble damages in a common pleas court action. This is not immunity. This is not a free pass. You go and
put at the commission, what remedy can the commission offer the insurance company in this case if they were to file with the commission? That's Same question I had earlier. I think it's just a question.
The remedy is a finding that our service was unreasonable, substandard, in violation of a mandate or in violation of some statute or regulation. They then take that and go to the Common Pleas Court, and they can get treble damages. I mean, that's a significant benefit to somebody that goes through the process.
So the PUCO has to find that your company fell short of the mark. That is then evidence to be used in a second round with the Common Pleas Court.
In essence, a damages action.
Who has to file that in PUCO?
It would be the customer, or in this case, you have a subrogation issue. Now, we take issue as to whether the insurance company should be able to file that action, but certainly they stand in the shoes of the customer. They file the action in the PUCO. If they prevail, they take that to the Common Pleas Court, and we are subject to treble damages.
Well, let me ask you, if you had a respondent or a employee responding to a line down call, and they're driving one of your vehicles, and they are in an automobile accident on their way to a service call, where would that be litigated?
Common Pleas Court, sure, absolutely. Your Honor, it's not what you're all of the case law.
It says service related. I think that's the language.
But Your Honor. But is the service the cause of the problem in that instance? No. It's the driving and hitting somebody. What all of the cases look for is, was the conduct consistent with a practice or a procedure? You need a mistake. You need an employee in the Harris case that they like.
But the difficulty I think we're having is, this is a subrogation claim by an insurance carrier who's already satisfied a claim of a policyholder. So this is a subrogation action, in effect.
Yes, Your Honor.
Filed as a negligence action, I find out. What you're talking about is a separate cause of action that the homeowner, Margaret Harris, could file for treble damages if there were some service-related defect with the service, in addition to the claim for subrogation. Can't you file both actions?
Well, she
one doesn't preclude the other.
No, but it would certainly limit the damages available to her if she's already recovered in one case and then takes it to the PUCO. What the PUCO would do in that instance would issue a, like in this instance, there. Go ahead, Your Honor.
I'm trying to straighten out is, I think we're all sort of troubled with, if we file an action before the Public Utilities Commission, what relief is available? They don't have any jurisdiction to handle a subrogation claim. They have jurisdiction, as you point out, to handle a treble damage claim on some defect with respect to public utility service being provided to the, in this case, the homeowner, Margaret Harris. And she can still file that action with the PUCO.
Absolutely.
This is a separate subrogated claim by an insurance carrier who's satisfied fire damages at a property.
Well,
isn't that properly venued in the Common Pleas Court?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. This court has said service-related claims versus pure tort claims. Service-related PUCO, tort claims go into Common Pleas Court. And that's the question. There's no reason to issue.
But that was the issue we had in Mid-American over in the Second District. And it was the same case almost.
No, Your Honor, not at all. The facts of that case are completely different. In that case, there was no evidence, and the court pointed it out, there was no evidence that the failure to investigate, the failure to act when its equipment was compromised, was part of a practice or a procedure of that utility. That is directly opposed to the facts in this case, where when that call came in, our equipment was never compromised. Our equipment worked all the way up to the fire. It was the homeowner's tree and the homeowner's wiring that went into the house that compromised the insulation, caused a spark to go into the ungrounded house, and the fire resulted.
Well, it was also the homeowner's call in the morning that didn't get responded to. And the fire occurs at, what, 5, 6 o'clock in the afternoon?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. If the damage occurred on a property as a result of a defective wiring job on the part of the company, goes to Common Pleas Court, no question?
Absolutely. You've been there More often than we'd like to admit, but yes.
So in those cases where there's an allegation that, you know, you didn't do something right out here and harm occurred, whether it's to property or to people, the company does not resist going to common pleas court.
No, because there they would point to an isolated act of negligence where the line is supposed to be 12 foot above a roof and it's only 10, or you're supposed to have a three-phase system and you only put two, or in the Harris case, you're supposed to tighten all the connections. That's how they're trained, and the man or woman that made the connection made a mistake. That is the isolated act of negligence that this court has always said belongs in common pleas court. But what you have here
But your argument here is we're entitled to take from 10:30 in the morning to 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
What we're saying here, Your Honor,
we're entitled to go to the Public Utilities Commission and say we don't have any negligence here because we're entitled to take that long to come out and address a problem.
No, Your Honor. What we would say is that our system for handling 9.7 million trouble calls is this. And here is how that call was processed. And if you're going to tell us that it should be processed differently.
The bottom line is you're saying it's okay for us to get a call at 10:30 in the morning and not respond to it by 5:30 in the afternoon. Get more than one call. It's okay.
Well, Your Honor, that happens often. With tree limb on a wire calls, that happens virtually every time, that it will take longer than 4 or 5 hours. But this was a unique situation. We've all seen the commercials that insurance companies have where somebody slips on an envelope, bangs into a cart, the cart rolls down the street, goes out a window, lands on the car's brake flies off, and the car ends up in a police station. And they joke about that, but they say, we're there for you. That's this kind of situation. What you had here is a tree that was on a wire for some unknown period of time until the property owner discovered it. And what does she call and she say? She says, the line's getting ready to snap. Our line never snapped. She says that my service equipment is being pulled away from the house, my mast.
But isn't the issue that a jury can decide whether CEI was negligent or not, just as well as three members of the Public Utilities Commission can? Particularly, you'd have an opportunity to present your plan and your practice and the fact that your plan has all been approved by the PUCO, I would guess, or whatever. Isn't that what expertise is needed by the commission to decide whether the company here was negligent in waiting as long as it waited? There may be very good reasons why it waited. I mean, the jury can understand that.
No, Your Honor, they can't, because they don't have the expertise, as the Public Utilities Commission does, in all utilities across Ohio, in handling trouble calls and what it takes to staff and be available to answer or respond to emergencies.
Why can't you just present that as evidence? Sure. I mean, a jury's decide more difficult questions than that.
Because they don't have the expertise, as does the PUCO. PUCO makes uniform decisions. They analyze systems. They analyze procedures. They tell us how fast we have to respond to a call. When I have 60 seconds on monthly average under the Ohio Administrative Code, based on the PUCO, to pick that phone up and talk to somebody.
Why couldn't a jury understand that? So far, you haven't been explaining brain surgery here.
Well, because the... And I probably couldn't explain brain surgery, Your Honor, but
at least not here. Only got 4 minutes. Let me manage.
But in this instance, you're talking about how to handle 9.7 million
calls.
There's
policy and there's uniform regulations on how the utility companies need to do their job, and those regulations are promulgated by the PUCO. And the question is, did you comply with those regulations? And once you explain the regulations to the jury and the evidence is as it is, I think the jury can figure out whether you comported with the evidence. And if there's any means within the regulations for exclusion from those duties and responsibilities, you would put forth your evidence as or case facts as to why that would kick in.
But you're assuming that there is a regulation directly applicable to the way we handle these customer service calls and the way we categorize the elements of danger. There isn't one. We tried the whole case with Allstate not telling us what questions we should have asked that we didn't, what standard we fell below, what industry standard that other utility companies are complying with that we did not. There isn't any such evidence. The Public Utilities Commission has not addressed this issue yet because we did exactly what our system is designed to do. This is an anomaly. It hasn't happened before, and it hasn't happened since.
But, counsel, it's still hard to understand why this is different from, say, a wrongful death case where someone is repairing service and is killed. And if you're talking about, you know, what happened, a jury needs to understand all of that, too. I mean, this sounds very similar. You're arguing over what forum you should be in, and the issue is, you know, what expertise is needed by the PUCO. And it just doesn't, I don't think you're making your case that this is a unique situation. It almost sounds like you're suggesting there should be exhaustion of administrative remedies before you allow someone to go to common pleas.
And Your Honor, the difference is, in the Kazmaier case that you mentioned earlier, this court acknowledged that there is no greater industry more regulated than the Public Utilities
Commission.
Well, and
that was a rate case. That was the amount that an individual was paying, and it related specifically to rates. So we did find that it was properly dismissed at the trial court level.
But you don't have, in your wrongful death case, you have an action that was not done consistent with a practice. You have a mistake. Somebody dropped the ball at one point.
So you're saying the jury wouldn't have evidence of practices of the utility and what was expected of an individual going up the pole and those issues wouldn't be before jury in a wrongful death case?
No, those would be, and that's why they're there. A jury can understand those. What a jury can't understand is, how do I staff to handle thousands and thousands of tree limb on a wire cases? How do I categorize them in terms of an emergency drop everything call? The Wilburn case in the Common Pleas Court of Cuyahoga County and affirmed in the Court of Appeals said, when you have evidence of a wire down, you gotta drop everything and run to it. And they said, and in that case, they also said, because you have practices and procedures, both at the PUCO and internally at CEI, you must drop everything, do not restore power, you run out and fix that case.
Now, you mentioned practices and procedures a lot in talking about this two-prong test. That's not anything that came from us, from this court, is that correct?
The practices and procedures?
Right. What Supreme Court case does that come from?
No, the practices and procedures is all of the appellate courts that are trying.
Okay, you're asking us to use that test that one of the appellate courts is coming up with.
That all of them have. They all look to the same thing. Is there evidence that the conduct complained of was part of a practice or procedure? If so, it's PUCO. And that's what this is. This is how to categorize emergency calls. This is not a wire down. If I have to drop everything to respond to thousands and thousands of trees on wires that I don't, it's not our equipment. Our equipment worked fine. It was her tree. It was her equipment that let loose. Our stuff worked all the way through. This was not something that
we
caused.
And that's something that you would explain to the jury, because it's not just how fast you responded. The other part of this equation, why you would say that you were not liable, is because what you just said, her tree limb on your equipment that you're responsible for maintaining, which didn't fail, and then her failure of having that box ripped from the home and then the sparks and et cetera. Her responsibility, the equipment that she's responsible for, and that's your defense to whether you now owe Allstate, you know, what they paid the homeowner, which I think is pretty basic information that a jury could readily absorb.
Yes, Your Honor, but the jury is allowed in that instance to say, could you have gotten there faster? If that is the test.
But if they follow the instructions, I would think it would be up to the court to determine what instructions and to outline the law for the jurors, and just like they do every day.
But again, and that's the reason the Public Utilities Commission expertise is needed, is that is the entity charged by this court and the state of Ohio to assess the practices and procedures of a utility. And that is what is at issue here, how we categorize and respond to trouble calls. And that belongs in the PUCO, consistent with this court and all the other courts that have addressed it.
Thank you, Mr. Michaels. Ms. Weaver, you saved 3 minutes of your time.
By the court, I don't have any further comments. You've hit on the issues that I wish to address in rebuttal, essentially. I know the
I do have a question then. You, as a subrogated party, stand in the shoes of your insured, correct?
Correct.
And your rights are only as great as your client's. Why would you not go to the PCO if you had a negligence case, prove it, and go collect treble damages?
I don't think that we would be entitled to treble damages under this circumstance. And the reason why we didn't pursue a claim in front of the PUCO is that they can't award monetary damages at all. The procedure is much slower.
But they do make a finding that there is liability, there is negligence, there is a violation of procedure, and you can take that with the damages, which are pretty cut and dry in this case. There's not a lot of dispute on damages, am I correct? There was
correct.
A fire, it was physical damage, it's not personal injury with a lot of give and take. Why, you have a set damage amount, you can take it. It seems to me you may have a duty to get your client to go with you and prove that, and your client can collect two times what you collect.
Well, the reason why we didn't pursue our claim before the Public Utilities Commission is that we didn't believe that it was appropriate there. We believed that it was an isolated act of negligence, a common law claim. We went to the Court of Common Pleas. All of the information that this court has suggested was presented to the jury about their practices and procedures and all that information. The jury had absolutely no trouble digesting that, including the information about what caused the fire, and they were able to render a verdict. In fact, I don't believe they ever asked a single question while they were deliberating.
And we would have to, if we agreed with you, we would have to remand because there are numerous other issues that court appeals did not address, correct?
That's true.
So we'd have to remand to the Court of Appeals to address the other issues.
Yes, there were a number of issues that the Court of Appeals did not address after they addressed the issue of jurisdiction. Finally, I just want to point out that CEI states in their brief, and they stated in their argument before you today, that under Ohio law, CEI's practices and procedures for customer calls are within the jurisdiction of PUCO. They've asserted that in their brief, and they've asserted that in their argument. They've provided absolutely no authority or statute that supports that position. The only statute that they can produce that supports that position, that PUCO is somehow responsible for how they respond to customer calls, is 4901-110, I believe. It's attached to their brief. And all that deals with that this is the time frame they have in which to provide installations, or as Mr. Michaels pointed out, that they have to pick up the phone within 60 seconds. That's the only support they ever produce for this position. And I think that that's good evidence that PUCO has decided they don't need to regulate response to customer service calls. That's something that is not within their expertise or where their expertise is not needed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please adjourn court.
All rise. Here.